So a few years back, I had conversations quite regularly with a young atheist, and he was going to teach me a lot of things about religion, but he believed that he believed the Big Bang Theory, that something happened in outer space, which I don't understand, and exploded, and we're all just accidents of that thing, and we have no real purpose in life. There's nothing to us. The reason that we exist is to stay alive and reproduce. And I thought it's kind of depressing, among other things, but that's what he said. And he still holds on to that way of thinking to this day. Now, I think, that's a mistake. But he said, we're kind of like raccoons. And he had no problem with euthanasia or abortion or anything like that, because he said, hey, we're all just trying to stay alive, but that's it. But he did say that he thought we were all kind of like raccoons. And so I had to put this picture there. Raccoons don't seem to have a lot of purpose in life. They live off our garbage and other things. If you have chickens, they like to eat your chickens. They like to eat eggs, that sort of thing and all that. But I have to tell you a little story about this. When I lived in Holland, I had a Mexican neighbor, and we got to be good friends. I was driving a Volkswagen at the time, and he would insult my Volkswagen. He would insult me in Spanish. I'd turn around and insult him back in Dutch. It was kind of like the UN, It was a good time. But he didn't have a backyard. He had a kind of an upstairs apartment, and I had a backyard in this little house I was renting. So he would put his grill and his deep fryer in my backyard on the condition that I could sample the food that he was preparing. And one day I was horsing around with him, and he was making this stuff. He had this what looked like ground beef, and he put onions in it and some kind of pepper that Hollanders can't pronounce, and he rolled it up in his flour tortilla and then deep fried it. And smelled really good, and he called me Gringo Loco, which, most everybody understands what that means. But then he said, you got to try this. And so I did. And the first bite, all the hair stood up in the back of my neck, and I started sweating. But then after about 5 minutes, once the pain subsided from a 9 to a 2, it started to taste pretty good. And so I had a couple of them. And then I said, now, what is this? And he kind of hemmed and hawed, and he said, it's mapache. And I said, what in the world is mapache? And he said, well, you told me you took a year of Spanish in college. I said, yeah, I did, but I've forgotten everything. Well, go get your Spanish dictionary, look it up. And I did. And you know what mapache is? Raccoon. And he explained that he would watch the garbage bins. He actually lived above a little barber shop. And he would watch the garbage bins, and then see a raccoon, he would harvest it and use it for food. But he believed too, well, he didn't, because he was a fairly religious man. But this other guy I talked to would say that, yeah, we're just accidents of evolution, just like this raccoon is. And in fact, we have over-evolved. Our brains have gotten too big. That's why we need psychotropic drugs, because, our brains have over-evolved and all that. And I just can't buy it. I mean, that's a major coincidence if that's true. Just if you look at the front paws of a raccoon, or look at your own hand, and you see that that's a pretty amazing device. General Motors can't come up with something like that. And just think about, it's just a really big coincidence if that's true. I don't think it is. I think God created, and I think there is a plan, and there's a specific plan for each one of us. We are a part of that plan, and our lives do have purpose for this time, this place. We are called to help in the redemption process, because God is in the business of making things better. And you all and I have a role in this. Now, the best book I've ever read on this subject is this one. What on Earth Am I Here For? It's the revised edition of The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. If you have not read it, I strongly recommend you read it. Start today, because it's probably the most important book I've ever read. And Rick Warren, Jan Rehm and I actually had coffee with him in Chicago one time at a conference. And he said that he was so thankful for this book. And of course, my thought was, why? Because it sold 3 million copies at that time and made you filthy rich. He goes, no, he said, I'm thankful that I had the privilege of writing it, that God put me in this place at this time to do that. And that the book has changed millions of lives. But it does ask the question, what on earth are you here for? And I think that's an important question. We need to figure it out. He goes through several ways of doing that. He says, what resources do you have? You know, what can you do? What do you have to use? Where can you have your greatest influence? And what do you think God is calling you to do? Yeah, you know, I asked some people that a while back, and they said, well, yeah, my calling is to hunt Sasquatch. Well, I don't think so. But the guy that told me that is a farmer, and he told the story of how this one guy was farming. He was out working in his cornfield, and he looked up and he saw the clouds, and the clouds had a very strong indication of PC, and we'd all think today personal computer, but back then he thought that meant to preach Christ. So what this guy did is he sold his farm and went to college, went to seminary, got himself ordained as a pastor, and he was awful at it. He lasted about 3 years and then had to quit. Well, he was very sad and despondent about that, and he died a few years later. He got into heaven, and the angel said to him, you know, he was talking with some angel or something, is how the story goes, and he said, yeah, he got this sign from God that he was supposed to preach Christ, and the angel goes, you idiot, that meant plant corn. See, we all have a different purpose. I hope you will work at uncovering your purpose. As Rick Warren says, it's definitely based on what you're interested in. What are you interested in? And that varies so greatly from person to person. You know, my new son-in-law, who wasn't my son-in-law yet when we were in London, wanted to watch a soccer game, or football as they call it. And the date was changed. It was moved back a day. It was Manchester United or some such thing like that. So they decided to stay in England an extra day. It cost them a lot of money to do that because of the change of date. And I said to him, you know, if you were going to ask me to go to this soccer game, you would have to, first of all, fly me to England, because I was back home, and pay all my expenses and offer me $1,000 cash to go watch whatever team that was. I would say no, because I have absolutely no interest in soccer. I coached for 7 years. I played when I was in college, but I got sick of it. I'm not interested in soccer anymore. Sorry if you're a big soccer fan. It's just a personal preference. But they did it. They stayed and watched whoever it was play soccer. I wouldn't possibly do it. No interest in it. But while we were there, while we were there in London, I went to Westminster Abbey by myself. Nobody else was interested in spending a whole afternoon in a church. But I was. See, because my interest is in religious history. I really like that stuff. I like seeing where all the dead kings are buried and whatnot. And it was just really interesting to me. So we have to go with where our interests are. And then he also, Rick Warren, talks about what is your role in life that you're in right now. It's a big deal, uncovering your purpose. You know, my roles are actually, obviously, I'm a pastor, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, and I'm a friend. And those roles are a natural way to uncover what your purpose is. See, the whole theme of the book of Esther is that God has appointed you for this time to do something of value. and he's speaking to you constantly. It's not a coincidence that you are here. And your suffering has trained you. A while back, I was having a discussion with some Senate executives. They were ordaining this group of seminary graduates, and there's question marks about some of them. And one of the older guys who'd been through all kinds of stuff was talking about this particular 40-year-old guy who was doing it as a second career. And they said, well, should we ordain him or not? And the answer was, well, his wife died of cancer 2 years ago. He's been through all this stuff. He suffered enough to be an effective pastor. That really stuck with me, because we can say all of the suffering, all the things that have gone wrong in our lives are really a training session for what we're here for. We're here for a reason. We're here on purpose. We're here on God's purpose. So today's story is about Queen Esther. And one of my Old Testament teachers saw this movie about Esther, said that's probably what she looked like. He also said that Esther is probably what we would call today historical fiction. That's based on the lives of some people that really existed, but it might be embellished a little. Now, that doesn't mean that God can't speak to us through it. He certainly can. We're going to start with Esther chapter 4 today, and I want to give you a little background to that. You know, the big deal of Israel is that Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, came in and took over. And he took all the wealthy people out of Jerusalem and made them slaves in Babylon. He left the farmers there, the people to work the land, but he took all the hoity-toity out of there. And what happened is Nebuchadnezzar, of course, died, like everybody does. And the Persians came in and took over. Now, Xerxes, a fellow named Xerxes, was the king. And he was like lots of people with unlimited power. He was insane. He threw a party for his noblemen. He got drunk. And it talks about that and how he ordered the queen, her name was Vashti, to appear and dance for his guests. Now, how many of you women would do that if your husbands or boyfriends throw a party and say, we want you to come in this room and dance for us? So I wonder how that would go. I can see by the smiles it would go very well. But Vashti refused. And here's the response to the refusal from the king's advisors. This is in Esther chapter 1. One of the advisors said, women everywhere will begin to despise their husbands when they learn that Queen Vashti has refused to appear before the king. You read that, you think, begin to despise? It's long past. That ship has sailed. And then a little later on, Vashti takes action. Xerxes takes action. He says this. He sent letters to all parts of the empire, to each province in its own script and language. And remember, folks, I didn't write this. Proclaiming that every man should be the ruler of his own home and should say whatever he pleases. I'll bet that went over really well. But what happened is Xerxes decides to depose his queen. You know, he's kind of like Henry VIII, who routinely divorced or executed his queens. And that's what he decided to do here. He's just going to depose Vashti. We don't really know what happened to her. But they began a search for a new queen. And, about that time, a fellow named Mordecai enters the story. And Mordecai was a Jewish exile. He was one of the Hebrew aristocracy that had gotten taken to Babylon and then moved to Susa. And he had an orphan cousin named Esther, whom he adopted and raised as her own daughter. Well, Esther was exceptionally attractive, and the people looking for the new queen noticed her. Now, what they did is they wanted to get at least 100 women to compete for this, and so Xerxes sent these people out to find 100 virgins to pick from. And that's what he did. It's almost laughable today, but that's what the story says. Now, Esther was chosen to be a part of that. She's taken into this harem of the king, but she didn't tell anyone that she was Jewish. Now, the process was that all these young women had to go through a year of beauty treatments, and then they could be presented to the king, to the king's bed. And then they had to go back to the harem quarters, and they might never see the king again unless he requested it. Well, Xerxes liked Esther, and he made her the queen in Vashti's place. And in the meantime, Mordecai, her cousin who had adopted her, heard of a plot to kill Xerxes, and he turns those people in. So he gets all kinds of points with this king. Now, the king had a right-hand man, kind of like the, our president has a leader of his cabinet, whatever you call that office. And this guy's name was Haman. And Haman, well, he was the king's right-hand man, but he was like a lot of people with power. He had quite an ego on him. And he wanted that when you saw him on the street, you bow to him. If you didn't bow to him, you could experience capital punishment. Now, Mordecai refused to bow to Haman. Jews don't bow to anybody. Just like us as Americans, we don't have to bow to any king. We don't do that. Mordecai refused to bow to Haman. So Haman was furious. And what he did is, with all of his power as chief of staff for the king, he plotted to kill Mordecai. But that wasn't enough. He wanted to kill all the Jews that were scattered throughout the kingdom of the Persians at that time. So Haman convinces Xerxes that the Jews are bad news. They're disloyal. They're going to try to overthrow the kingdom and all that. So then Xerxes issues a decree to have all the Jews killed. And you would get paid to kill your Jewish neighbor. Okay, and the date that he decided to do this was determined by throwing dice. Dice are called Purim, and the Jewish festival of Purim that goes on still commemorates this. It's really the festival of dice. So Xerxes has issued this decree that all the Jews be killed. And that takes us up to chapter 4 of Esther, where today's reading is from. And it reads like this. When Mordecai learned all about all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on burlap and ashes, and went out to the city, crying with a loud and bitter wail. He went as far as the gate of the palace, for no one was allowed to enter the palace gate while wearing clothes of mourning. And as news of the king's decree reached all the provinces, there was great mourning among the Jews. They fasted, wept, and wailed, and many people lay in burlap and ashes. When Queen Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, she was deeply distressed. She sent clothing to him to replace the burlap, but he refused it. Then Esther sent for Hathach. Now, if you first study the Hebrew in Oklahoma, it's Hathach. But if you study Hebrew in Michigan, it's Hathach. I first studied it in Oklahoma, so it's Hathach. One of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed as her attendant, she ordered him to go to Mordecai and find out what was troubling him and why he was in mourning. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the square in front of the palace gate. Now, a couple of things here that you need to know. If you don't know what a eunuch is, that is a neutered man. But it wasn't a vasectomy, guys. It was chop them off. And this was done without anesthesia. So just try to imagine that. It's not a nice thing. And the weird part of it is that sometimes it was elective. Sometimes guys wanted that so that they could be in the king's service and take care of the queen without worrying about getting the queen pregnant. That's what it was all about. They could attend the queen with no risk of pregnancy. Now, this neutering practice was forbidden by Old Testament law. The Jews can't even neuter their dogs. It's considered immoral. So they won't eat meat from neutered animals, like we always neutered all our pigs and cattle. They won't eat that. There has to be meat that is from a non-neutered animal if it's going to be kosher. Now, what happened with these eunuchs, and this is kind of slightly R-rated, but what happened with the eunuchs is most of the time they were slaves, teenage boys who were purchased by wealthy men, people who had lots and lots of money, and they would have these teenage boys neutered and they used them as sexual partners. So that's what was going on there, and the word eunuch became interchangeable with the English word homosexual. Because the word homosexual is not in the Old Testament, it's not in the New Testament either until about 1850 when they started translating it into, you know, when the English versions picked that up. But eunuch and homosexual were always kind of interchangeable and still is today in the Hebrew language. So that's just a little background on this. And like I said, I want to make you into Bible scholars, so when you see the word eunuch in there, you know what baggage they all had with it. So the story goes on. Here's verse 7. Mordecai told him the whole story, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai gave Hathath a copy of the decree issued in Susa that called for the death of all Jews. He asked Hathach to show it to Esther and explain the situation to her. He also asked Hathach to direct her to go to the king to beg for mercy and plead for her people. So Hathach returned to Esther with Mordecai's message. Now it says this takes place in Susa, which is in southwest Iran. So it's got particularly interesting relevance for us today. This is one of the ruins of Susa that's still in existence. And when I was looking around at that stuff, I thought, boy, you know, if I wanted to do a nuclear enrichment program, I'd do it in a place like that. That's built 2,500 years ago and is a World Heritage Site. You know, that nobody's going to suspect that place because it's been empty for so long. But anyway, that's still standing in southwest Iran. So here the story goes on. Then Esther told Hathach to go back and relay this message to Mordecai. All the king's officials and even the people in the provinces know that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die unless the king holds out his gold scepter. And the king has not called for me to come to him for 30 days. So Hathach gave Esther's message to Mordecai. Mordecai sent this reply to Esther. Don't think for a moment that because you're in the palace, you will escape when all the other Jews are killed. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. And here's the message of Esther. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this? That's the heart of the passage. That's the heart of the book. God, you know, God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. There's no mention of God whatsoever. It reads like a good narrative, but God's not mentioned. But here we see God's plan for Esther. She was a bad girl, you know. She broke all kinds of Jewish laws by flirting with a pagan king, by becoming a queen to a pagan king. She was naughty, yet she was placed there for a reason, so that she could talk some sense into this king who was beside himself with his own ego. So the narrative goes on. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go and gather together all the Jews of Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will do the same. And then, though it is against the law, I will go in to see the king. If I must die, I must die. So Mordecai went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. So she was willing to fulfill her mission even at the cost of her life. She reported for duty, willing to sacrifice everything. In the Hebrew, she's called the Eshet Hayel, the woman of valor, the woman of moxie. She was a brave girl. Jesus talked about this kind of sacrifice too. If you look at Luke chapter 9, Jesus does this. Then he said to the crowd, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross daily and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, but are yourself lost or destroyed?" Again, Jesus talks about reporting for duty, about finding your purpose and fulfilling it. You can do it your way or you can do it Jesus' way. And after all these years of being a pastor, I can tell you with absolute authority, Jesus' way is better. So pursue that. Now, this has struck me because I like to ask the question, how many more days do you think you have in this life? You know, I ask myself that question all the time. I'm going to be 70 years old my next birthday. I think, how many more opportunities am I going to have to teach this stuff? How many more days do I have? Do you want to spend the rest of your life avoiding pain and pursuing pleasure? Well, it's up to you. But your life has an expiration date. And it's my job to remind you of that. Ask yourself the question, why are you still breathing? Why has God given you another day? And sometimes we can't know. Sometimes that question perplexes me. My mom is in a nursing home, in an Alzheimer's unit. She's been there for 7 years. She can't walk. She's 90% blind. She doesn't know who I am. And she can't swallow. They have to grind her food and feed her. What's her purpose? And I have to say, I don't know. The answer to that's way above my pay grade. Why is God keeping her alive? I don't know. What's her purpose? I don't know. But the reality is, I'm not in charge of her purpose. I never have been. I'm responsible for me. And you are responsible for you. What are you here for? If God gives you tomorrow, and he probably will, but some of us maybe not, but if he gives you tomorrow, what will you do with it? And that's why it's important to uncover your purpose. Now, I've had a passion for understanding the Bible since I was a kid. And I still have that passion, so I teach it as much as I can. You know, I'm all fired up about Esther, and when I'm done with Esther, I'm going to do a series on Timothy in the New Testament. Then I'm going to go back to the Old Testament and do a series on the Ten Commandments. And I'm fired up for doing it. So my passion for that has directed me to my purpose. You need to find your passion. And then report for duty. 6 years ago, you know, we just had a consistory meeting. And I was looking at the minutes from 6 years ago. And we were trying to decide how to reopen, whether to have one service or two, all the things about reopening. We were closed for COVID, and I was in a state of despair. I met with a group of pastors all about my age, and you know, we said, well, what is God up to? Why are all these churches closed? You know, and all of us were all set to retire. We could afford to retire at that point. And we were strongly considering it, strongly. But we didn't. Because one of the guys in that group, who's still a pastor in Jenison, said, maybe God put us experienced pastors in place for just a time like this. Maybe he put us in place to help the churches weather this storm. Perhaps it's true. None of us have retired. And I'm still excited about my work 6 years later. Now, here's the thing. Meaningless days just slip away. and a meaningless life will too. I've conducted over 500 funerals in my life. And I know some of those folks never had a clue why they were here. And others were fervent servants of Jesus. Guess which ones were happier? Guess which ones died content? It's the ones who found their purpose and filled it. Now, Jesus talked about this, you know, as we read in that passage. If you lose your life for my sake, you'll find it. It means if you want your purpose clarified, ask him. Esther was put in a place that she was put in to save an entire race of people, and you probably won't have to do that. But he will give you a purpose, something to accomplish. Someone who needs your support. Someone who needs a friend. My youngest daughter is a surgical nurse. And my other kids say that she's definitely my favorite, but you know, what do they know? But she had this conversation with a seasoned nurse recently and about taking care of surgeries. And the seasoned nurse told her, you be the one that the doctors are happy to have in the room. You be the one that does the surgery the best. And I think that's great advice. If your calling is to be a surgical nurse, don't replace my right knee when it's my left knee that needs to be replaced. You know, be the best at what you do. Answer your calling. Now, not all of us are going to be surgical nurses. I'm definitely not going to be. But we all have a function. We all have a purpose in this life. It could be that. Could be anything else. Tons of other things. The question I want to leave you with today is very simple. Same question that Mordecai asked Esther. Who knows if perhaps you were made for such a time as this? Would you pray with me, please? Lord, we don't know why a lot of things happen all around us. We don't know why we're called to do what we're called to do. But we know that you call us, and we're thankful for it. My prayer for everybody in this room and everybody who listens to this on video today is simple. That all of us are moving towards uncovering our purpose and living that fulfilled life that we can live by being a part of your plan. So give us the brains to make that happen. Amen.